With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Which means we're illegal today.
Get it together.
No, I'm not going to.
I was illegal yesterday.
It's fine.
My parking job.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got the ticket.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. And you know what? You know what's crazy about it? I checked the time, and I actually, because, you know, all right, we're during the show, right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, God, we're in a break. 40 minutes after the meter runs out. And I'm like, and I got the app, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
I could add time.
Yep, exactly.
Via the app. So I'm sitting here, I'm on the app. You're like, JD, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I'm trying to add them. Well, you know what? I ended up. So because I've used it so much, and you type in the number of the thing, and I always take a picture of the meter.
Sure.
So I got the number, right?
Right, yeah.
So you type in the number for the meter, but because I have so many different numbers on there, here's what I did. I typed in part of the number, and it brought up the rest of the number, and I go, okay, yes, boom, boom. I put it on the wrong number.
Oh, you fed someone else's meter.
I fed somebody else's meter, and it was 70221, but I put 70212. So I fed somebody else's meter, and as I look at the ticket,
wow,
the ticket was given after I fed.
You fed?
So if I had fed the right number, I would have been fine.
Wow, that's painful. That's brutal. Honestly, that is brutal. There should be some layer of fighting of that ticket. If you've got documentation that you fed the meter.
Oh, yeah. Which I would on the app, I would imagine.
Show up at the county courthouse and tell them.
And they'll say, well, that's not the right meter.
But your app.
And they've got documentation that says that I. They got documentation that says that I fed the wrong meter.
But say your app is the app that auto-filled in where I was parked.
And then I agreed to it. Listen to me making my own case for being wrong.
Yeah, you got to stand up for yourself a little bit on this.
I mean, I would. I mean, I would go in and fight it.
Do it. Yeah. Most likely the cop doesn't show up. And then you win. That's brutal.
I'd be all right with that.
You know what? That's brutal.
So, yeah. So, again, I was late. But had I had the right number get typed in, I had it. The guy came by and gave me the ticket like 15 minutes later.
That's brutal. We're going to go to break in a couple minutes. I'm going to find out where you parked yesterday. I want to find out where these cops are coming from. Today's a good day to park in the city.
Yes.
But you're not going to make that mistake today. I'll promise you that, brother. But that's a painful mistake, right?
It is.
Sorry about that, man.
And it really is. It's, you know, I do feel like it's my own fault. I really do. Look at me admitting this on the air. They're going to use this against me.
Yeah, I know.
They go fight it.
You know what? You're a good man if you...
I mean, it was a wrong
number. You're
better
than I am.
I mean, it's a technicality, but technically it's a wrong number.
It would have ruined the rest of my day, but you're a better man than I am.
Well, I mean, it... All right, you didn't see the hole I punched in my back window.
There you go. The reality of the moment comes in strong. Good for you. You know what I mean? God. That's just the way... Hey, that's the price of doing business when you're in San Francisco. Right?
Yeah, it is.
It's either that or someone's going to punch a hole in your window.
Yeah,
and steal
that might
stuff.
Happen today.
Don't bring that
up. I mean, I got nothing to steal, but...
It doesn't matter now. It used to be where they'd knock a hole in your window to steal something. Now it doesn't matter. Now they just want to knock holes in your window.
Yeah.
Dent your car. Can't tell you how many coworkers of mine over at the NBC complex have had that happen. It's brutal. Brutal on that side of the city. All right. We're going down a rabbit hole of all things.
We are.
When we continue, I know, JD, you were out at the baseball game yesterday. I want to get a quick little touch-up on that.
Sure.
Because it is fun. I don't care what anyone says about interleague play. Now it's probably washed out in your mind. You don't even care about it. But the ones that have significance, the Angels-Dodgers, the Mets-Yankees, the Cubs-White Sox, the Giants-A's, those matter a little bit more. And I'll be honest with you. I think it was fun last night. You said how many fans were at the ballpark last night?
It was 53,000 something.
That's outstanding. How great is that for Bay Area baseball? And it doesn't matter if there was maybe there were more Giant fans than there were A's fans in the A's own ballpark. Doesn't really matter at all.
Doesn't matter.
It's just everyone's there enjoying the game, having fun. And as I was watching it, they do a great job of showing all the couples that are there that are commingled couples, you know. The husband's got his Giants gear. The wife's got her A's gear. Love that stuff.
It was a nice split.
That's a good split. I could maybe I'm. Did we see any split hats last night? No split. Any split cap?
I didn't.
Okay.
But I wasn't really looking for them.
All right.
Like you would have been if you had been.
Oh, yeah. I would have been. And I would have been taking selfies with all of them.
Running around. You would have been taking selfies with your shirt off.
Oh, definitely.
Because that's how you roll.
Old Francisco. Well, ladies, you're welcome at that thought. Listen, JD and I are going to talk a little bit about the Bay Bridge series. If you're going to the game today, I'd love to hear from you. If you went last night, what was the atmosphere like? 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570, or hit us on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. JD, some advice for you on parking in the city, all that and more when we continue on 95.7 The Game.
The Game.
You know, I had some friends over the crib yesterday, and they were asking about the, you know, I mean, we have a pretty cool job.
Definitely.
We watch sports, and then we get to go to games, and then we talk about it.
And then you go home, and you start smoking tri-tip.
Oh, let me tell you something.
Oh, man.
I did all right yesterday.
You got leftovers?
I do, actually. Feel free if you want to stop
There's
by.
Nothing better than a tri-tip sandwich.
I'm telling you, bro, you can stop by. Man. Feel free.
Well, I'm just going to start showing up.
I know.
Just
pull up. There's enough parking.
Hey.
Oh, how about this?
Hey, Mrs. K.
Last night, 1:30 in the morning, my dog starts barking, and my kids have a sleepover and all this. I'm like, uh-oh, something weird's going on. Our house got toilet papered last night. How crazy is that?
Well, you know what that means.
We're the bad people on the block?
No.
What?
No, just, you know, it means you're... Means your daughters are likable, probably.
You know, someone had to be playing a joke.
Yeah, I think it's harmless. That's fun.
I agree.
That means that somebody's made an imprint, like a positive imprint.
Yeah. So someone's having fun. That's fine. So, because I was a little worried that someone, you know, maybe they ripped some trees out of the front yard or pulled some bushes out or something. No, they just toilet papered the house. That's fine.
It's not like Mean Girls, like Payback.
Yeah. No one spray painted the front of my house, the garage door, you suck. We hate you, Coz. It wasn't that. But so that was kind of odd. But it was cool that we had some people over yesterday because we had the 49er game on. I'm flipping over to the A's and the Giants. And my one buddy wanted to watch the college game, Florida and Miami. I didn't even get a chance to look at that.
The U is not back.
They're not?
No, they're not.
That whole storyline that ABC and ESPN's trying to run at me, that the former ESPN intern, who's now the head coach of the Miami Hurricanes,
The Gators beat them. But the best game of the night was Hawaii and Arizona.
Oh,
right?
Down to the final second, the final play, 1 yard away.
But we digest.
I know. We're off the. But here's the cool part of it. People ask you about your career a lot. I bet when you're in public and they find out, oh, John Diggins, you're a sportscaster and you do a radio show, it's kind of a thing to talk about.
It is fun.
But one of the questions, you know, it's always like, what's your favorite thing to do or sport to talk about and all that stuff? And then my one friend's, and I was trying to tell him that you get into it because you love sports. After you get into it, you get behind the curtain, and there's some things you kind of find out that you wish you didn't know. You'd rather like sports than know some of the stuff you know.
Right.
All right, that's
sports
fair.
And the industry.
Exactly.
At times.
Absolutely. And so they said, well, what's your guilty pleasure? Like, is there something that you can be a fan of? I like Australian rules football. Love watching that. It's on FS2 at 9 o'clock on Fridays or Saturday nights. So that's like 1 in the afternoon in Australia. I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of, I like watching soccer, whether it's the European Premier League, or I'm sorry, the English Premier League, or it's MLS. I like to watch MLS. No, I'm not a diehard, but I like to watch it. And the other thing I like to watch, JD, the CFL, Canadian Football League.
Okay.
I'm a Canadian, I've got it on right now. I'm a Canadian Football League guy. And you might notice the quarterback for your Toronto Argonauts is former Sacramento State slinger.
He's still playing?
Bethel Thompson.
Oh, okay.
Not Ray. Not that guy. He just retired.
McLeod Bethel Thompson?
McLeod Bethel Thompson.
He was in the league for a while.
And, yep, he was. He was a 49er for a while.
Yeah.
He's now your starting quarterback for the Toronto Argonauts.
McLeod Bethel Thompson led this might have been 10 years ago now, led just a massive fourth quarter Causeway Classic comeback. I think three touchdowns. I think he threw three touchdown passes in the fourth quarter of a huge win over, it might be the last time Sac State beat Davis.
That was at Sac State,
yeah.
Right?
I think it was 2009. I was too.
I either did the game or I was at the game.
Yeah.
Were we at the game together?
We were not at the game together, but I got in the habit as a Sac State guy to go to the Causeway there.
That's a good little... That's
still
good,
in my 20s at that time.
It is a good little classic. For a brief time, we changed the name of the Causeway Classic because I was doing the game. Every year, because that's part of my enormous broadcast resume.
But anyway, that's my McLeod Bethel Thompson memory,
and it was a great memory.
It was a great memory because no joke. I think Sac State's beaten Davis like twice this century, not this decade, this century.
Yes,
but that was one of the two,
and it was a spectacular run.
Yeah,
he's a former UCLA Bruin quarterback too.
Yeah.
So the guy's got some talent. But I like seeing guys in the CFL. So those are my guilty pleasures. Do you have any sports guilty pleasures, or can you still be a sports fan?
I've lost the fandom. The one thing I do, I'll pick a team in a sport every year and just kind of a team that I'm not covering.
Okay.
And it's, I kind of like that story.
That's cool.
I try to do that as a means to just trying to get. The other thing I'll do a lot is even at games I'm covering, I like to take some time out and walk around the stadium because I think it gives you a feel for just what the average guy and gal are doing, the average family are doing. Like, to me, you can't lose that perspective. Like, so often we go, as media members, we go and we ride in and we park in our media lot and we walk in and we go up, take the elevator up to the press box or wherever we're doing, whatever we got to do. And you feel completely isolated from the fans.
You are. You're not. You have no concept of what fan is doing.
So I actually, at just about every game, I try to allow time to walk around and get the feel, get the vibe for the fans. Just see people in jerseys and see what people are yelling about. And,
yep.
And so that's one, I don't know if it's a guilty pleasure, but it's something I try to do in every building at every game is just get a feel for some of the joy that goes along with professional sports.
I am an enormous advocate for everyone in our industry. One time a year, they have to buy tickets, drive to the game, find parking, tailgate or walk into the game with average Joe fan, and sit in seats and watch a game.
Yeah. And I will do that once or twice a year, too.
It is a completely different experience. You appreciate how fans appreciate the game, because sometimes when we get to go to games, we don't appreciate it.
And usually I'll do like a random game. Like, to me, like I've done a couple of random games. Like, I went to a Blue Jays Rangers game. No, there was Blue Jays Diamondbacks. I went to a Blue Jays Diamondbacks game.
So you were covering the Warriors in the finals.
In the finals. Went to a Blue Jays Diamondbacks game.
I get it.
Went to an Astros Rangers game when the Warriors are playing Houston.
Okay.
But just kind of a random game, different experience. It's had a good time with it.
It's also a little different to do it outside of your region.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You are a random fan at that point. But I think sometimes it's good to do it here. You know? Like, I'm trying to grab tickets for next Saturday night's Giants home game. I think they're playing the Padres.
Yeah.
And again, that's not even, honestly, I'm trying to get them from, where I work. Get some ins in this. That's cheating right there. But I'm already thinking of, gosh, I'm going to have to drive over the bridge. The game, first pitch at 6. What time do you leave? Where are you going to park? It's not like going to work. When you go to work, where I know where I'm going to park, and I know where I'm going to go in, and I know where I'm going to get my cut rate meal, and the end.
See, now, if it was during the week, I would say take BART. But on the weekend, BART can just be so sketchy as far as like the timing. Not sketchy. I just mean the timing.
But it can be the other way.
It can be, but to me, it's more about you might, a 25-minute ride might take you an hour and a half, and you might need to get on a bus.
That's not good. It's funny. You know, someone from the 405 says, you guys sound so elitist right now, which is funny because I'm trying to do the exact opposite, is to point out how we get that we aren't experiencing the game as you, and we admire how you are doing it.
Exactly.
And we kind of miss that feel.
It's getting appreciation for the fans.
I've lost count of the people in our industry who hate our business. Like, how many happy people do you see in our business versus how many miserable people do you see in our business?
Yeah.
The miserable side leads by a large distance.
Yeah, it's probably 70-30, honestly.
Some people wear the misery like it's a badge of honor.
Right.
And I think that they've completely lost sight
of sometimes
what
it
is.
Becomes such a part of their brand that...
It's embarrassing. That all that anger, it's just not good for anybody. But for goodness sakes, we're talking about sports. And that's why, anyway, let's get back to that here. JD and Co's with you on 95.7 The Game here on a Sunday morning. Hope you're enjoying your Sunday, wherever it might be. Marine layer burning off here in the city, buddy.
53,367 at the Collie last night.
Would you have guessed? You know what? If someone would have said 40K for last night, I'd have taken the under. 53,000 is a spectacular number.
That's an unbelievable number.
I love the fact that everyone's getting geeked about this series. The A's are playing for something. The Giants are playing for heart and gut. Their eighth inning last night, they're down to the eighth inning. Their eighth inning last night was fantastic. And then to see Stephen Vogt come up and go oppo and hit the home run against his former team. And again, it's not a hatred thing. I think Stephen Vogt's one of the most beloved former A's there is. Wouldn't you call him? I'd call him that. Stephen Vogt?
Wait, call him what?
As a former A, A's fans love him.
Oh, definitely.
So it's not one of those, he left us and, you know, we hate him. No, it was just an unfortunate. He was loved as an A. He's gone on to have a nice career outside of the Athletics, comes home, but he hits one in the place where he used to wear the A's uniform.
Yeah, it was a 3-run homer that banged that game open.
Oh, it sure did. It sure did. And it was just a fun atmosphere last night. You were there in the ballpark.
It was awesome.
Could you sense that it kind of had a special feel?
Here's how the Bay Bridge series always goes. The Giants side really downplays it. Bob Melvin mostly downplays it. Other than he does say, hey, this is important to our fans, and he does say every year that he mentions it to the players, hey, it's important to the fans, this rivalry.
Yeah.
And so it kind of gets downplayed, and then the game actually starts, and you're thinking, wow, this is awesome. Because I think the players get caught up in it, even though it gets downplayed leading up to it, to where you look up and it's the third inning, and this is whether it's at Oracle Park or at the Coliseum, it doesn't matter where, you look up in the third inning, you're thinking, man, this is awesome, and the players are into it, and the games wind up being dogfights.
You know what's interesting to me on the Giants front? Why is it that on the road, and again, on the road is in quotes because they're only in Oakland, they bang out 13 hits on the road. At home, they can't seem to score runs, they don't have as much offense. What is it about this? This team goes away from their own ballpark, and they can do things.
They're a normal offensive team on the road.
A normal team on the road.
Even if it's the Coliseum, which is a pitcher's park in and of itself.
Crawford with a bomb, his 10th. Vogt with that 8th inning home run, his 8th. In the 8-run 8th inning. I mean, they're just a different team. Hey, your boy Dickerson coming back. You on the bandwagon? Is he part of the future?
I don't know. He might be. He might not be.
He's
probably not, but
I'm bullish on him. I like Alex Dickerson.
I mean, he'll get a chance to make the team next year, but they're also going to bring in a couple of guys that are going to be competing with him.
Sure, and I get that. Are you of a belief that Dickerson and Yastrzemski can be regulars for 162 games and you could be a winning team with those guys?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
I got to see more.
Okay. Is this going to be the same? Are we going to get in for more churn next year? Is your phone going to be blown up every day with more texts from the Giants with, here's another roster move, here's another roster move?
Probably. Good teams don't do it as much because they don't need to make changes. But
right. That's the biggest thing, is how many years of this are we going to have to endure in order for it to get to a normalcy where you're not making moves all the time. You're not trying to find the diamond in the rough just to plug another hole that you happen to have. That you've somehow found a somewhat set lineup. Because I don't even know if in today's game you have set lineups. The way they analyze the game, sometimes you need multi-positional guys who can play third, and they can play right, and they can play left, and sometimes they can play second. So I don't know about the set lineup dynamic, but how long are they so depleted of talent that it's going to take 2 or 3 years of the churn that we're going through?
It looks like they're closer than you would have thought.
Okay.
But guys like Yastrzemski and Dickerson are a big part of that. Pillar, Vogt.
I like Dickerson. I think Yastrzemski has done enough to warrant, you know, well, what
they're going to get looks next year.
Right. Right. But when they get the looks, I think they start as number one on the depth chart. Someone has to knock them off.
Maybe.
You just think they're there?
I just think they're there. I mean, I don't know. I think you could go find other guys that could provide what they've provided and maybe do it more consistently.
You know, it's funny. If you want to equate this to what the 49ers had in 2017 when they won 5 games at the end of the year and then we thought it was fool's gold, or it ended up being fool's gold. They overpay a quarterback. You can argue they overpaid the quarterback based on a 5-game run.
Yeah, this is akin. Well, I'll let you finish.
Okay, so let's. Maybe we artificially thought the 49ers were ahead of where they really were.
Right.
Are the Giants, you know, is there a little bit, could there be a little bit of fool's gold that we thought this was going to be one of the 2, 3, 4 worst teams in baseball? They're a 500 team, which is not one of the 2, 3, 4 worst teams in baseball. So do we think that, well, maybe they are onto something where this churn is going to help them find the right guys a little bit quicker? Or is it a little bit of, you know, that's, I guess that's the question. Is the 500 record fool's gold?
It's not fool's gold, but it's not an indicator that you're going to be better than that next year automatically, or that you're going to be better than that next year with the same group that you had this year. Because sometimes guys just have upticks and then they have down ticks. I mean, if anything, Dickerson's proven he can't stay healthy.
That's his narrative. That's his entire career.
I
highly thought of prospect.
The football comparison for me is more you start 0-4, then you go 4-0, and then you go 4-4.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really what this team has done, right?
Right.
They started 0-4. If you want to say, hey, they're a football team, they started 0-4.
Mm-hmm.
They went 4-0.
Now and we're excited.
And now they're going. And now they're, you know, 3-3, let's say.
Sure. I understand, you know,
in the next 6 games. So there's 2 games left, and they're 7-7.
And so you sit back and you kind of say, all right, what are they? And what got them to where they are? Because at the start of the year, we did think it was bad.
It was.
We didn't see where it was getting.
It was bad. And see, I think you can draw a tangible line, Coase, between what it was. Like, what it was at the beginning was a different team. Like, there were different players on. Like, it was Connor Joe's and Michael Reed's and.
That's a good point.
Solarte's and Duggar's.
My Connor Joe jersey.
They upgraded it. They upgraded at a bunch of positions. I know it seems silly to say that, but they upgraded. Stephen Vogt helped the catcher position because Buster Posey wasn't doing it on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Pillar's a better freaking player than Stephen Duggar, who I'm borderline willing to call a bust.
Really? Interesting.
Dickerson improved over what they were running out there in left field. Yastrzemski improved on what they were running out there in right field.
And they were affordable fixes. They didn't have to go out and overspend to get something, whether that was overspend financially or overspend in whatever other capital you had within your minor league system. They're finding these bit pieces slowly but surely, and they're not high-priced, whatever you want to determine the price. You know, it's not like they said, it's not like Farhan Zaidi came from the Dodgers and said, I know they got a couple of guys at A-ball who are going to be maulers. They're going to get backed up because the Dodgers are stuck with great position players at those spots. So I'm going to go to the Dodgers and I'm going to maybe overspend with some of my minor league guys to go and get those guys who I know are going to. He didn't do that.
No.
He didn't give up any of what he had, maybe because he still has to analyze what he has. And that's maybe the greater question, what was he left in the cupboard?
I think he's done a pretty good job of that.
Okay.
I think, and part of that is all the different players that have been brought up.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think you can say, and the old Giants way of thinking would be, all right, Dickerson's the left fielder now, Yastrzemski's the right fielder now. Like that, would Pillar's the center fielder now. The reality is, no, that's what got you through 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And does that afford them all opportunities next year? Yeah, they'll be in the mix. Next year, but guess what? You might go find closer to name brand talent that can put up that production or put up more production.
Yep. I get you.
And do it for 6 months instead of four.
Yep, I hear you. You're right. I agree, and maybe there's a wave of guys coming. And
But the good news is that Farhan Zaidi has shown that he can take whatever the baseline is and fix it to a certain extent on the fly. Like, he can get it. He can make it better than it initially was. Like, you can give him a roster, and he can, in 2 months, make whatever that roster was, in this case an awful roster, into a respectable roster. So if, let's say, you're starting next year with a respectable roster, or you're starting this offseason with a – and respectable might even be a little too kind.
Sure.
But let's say you're entering the offseason with close to a 500 team's worth of talent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, last year you were starting with a 70-win worth teams. So you're already a little bit ahead of the game, mm-hmm. and he's shown that he can add. And I still think a big part of this combination of, look, the Giants have money, but Farhan's got some Dodgers in his DNA, and he's got some A's in his DNA.
Yeah.
And having the combination of both is huge, because what it gives you is Farhan will be able to shop for the bargains, but he's also going to spend more wisely than the Giants have been spending when they do spend money. Like, he may, you know, the example I use is Justin Turner.
Okay.
The Dodgers offered Justin Turner, I think, a 4-year, $64 million contract, which mm-hmm. he signed. And I'm thinking, whoa, 4 years and $64 million for Justin Turner? That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's the kind of guy, if the Giants sign him, he immediately stinks. Well, the Dodgers had an idea that he wasn't going to stink.
Yeah, they did.
And guess what? He hasn't. He's been a good player. And that's a guy that was, I think, 32, maybe, mm-hmm. 31, 32, yep. late bloomer.
Yep.
So they kind of knew that he wasn't going to be a guy that got paid in his early 30s toward his mid-30s and stink. So that's evaluation. And if the Giants can do a few more deals like that
mm-hmm.
that aren't crazy $200, $300 million deals, they're going to be a better team for it.
So when the season started and you knew Farhan Zaidi was here, did you think, all right, he's stripping it down like the Astros did?
No.
You were never in that camp.
Because I also think, like, here's the thing, and Billy Beane talks about this a lot. Like, he wants to try and be competitive every year. See, and I think the Giants love that. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's a big part of, like, I think Farhan's got some of that. I'm going to try and make the best. I'm going to try to make lemonade out of lemons every year. You know, if you have lemon, you know, eventually you don't want to have lemons. But,
right.
But Billy Beane, every year Billy Beane tries to be good. Now, it doesn't work out every year.
At some point, stretch.
But yeah, well, but that wasn't Astros or Cubs, and he tried to win.
Right.
Every year Billy Beane tries to win.
Okay.
And okay, if you're not in it in August, you trade guys, or July, you trade guys.
Right.
And yeah, they were developing Olsons and Chapmans, and they had draft picks that they hit on, and, mm-hmm. and a lot of the pitchers that aren't up yet. But he tries to win every year, and I think the Giants appreciate that aspect of, even if it's semi on the cheap, we want a guy that's going to try and win every year. And here's the other thing. If you're getting bargains in certain areas, that means you can overspend in other areas.
Right.
So I think the Giants management views that as awesome, because they think they can pay some of the guys they want to pay, but they're going to pay them in a smarter fashion
sure.
than they had previously. But you're also going to find enough bargains to where you can maybe make a mistake or two, and it's not going to crush you.
See, I was of the belief they were going to tear it down to get better, that they saw the dominance the Dodgers were in right now. And Farhan Zaidi knows exactly what phase the Dodgers are in, because he was part of the team that built it.
But the Dodgers didn't do that.
No, they didn't. They went out and spent wildly, though. That was a big difference.
They spent wildly before that regime came in, and then they had enough resources to
sure.
fix it.
Right.
But they paid money to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they did.
Like, they paid money for some guys to go away, and they
yeah.
took back some bad contracts.
Yes,
they were really
they did.
Creative with how they did it. But they also won the division a bunch of times in a row.
Yeah, they have been they've become relevant again, and now are the most relevant team. In fact, I would go so far as to say, if the Dodgers don't win the World Series, it's a disappointment in LA this year.
Well, yeah.
If you don't win the World
Series. And
that's
tough, because they're probably due to go out in the division series, just based on the fact that teams don't go to three straight World Series.
Man, they're good.
They're great.
Man, they're good.
They're great.
I don't know who in the National League can play with them.
They're great. Only takes 3 out of 5.
You're right. It's an inexact science, isn't it?
It only takes 3 out of 5.
Yep, it's an inexact science. We've seen it before. But, man, they are something else. Anyway, back to the Farhan Zaidi thing and building the team. The Dodgers didn't tear it to the studs for some reason. I had the belief that they were in the midst of let's tear to the studs.
Well, look, if things had gone horribly this year, maybe we'd be having that conversation. But I don't think that was the I think the initial plan was let's see what you got.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, to Farhan's credit, and I don't know that this conversation was had, but to Farhan's credit, and maybe we get into this more coming up, he looked around the room and he looked at the guys that he was, for lack of a better term, stuck with.
That's true.
Posey, Belt, Crawford, Longoria, maybe even Panic.
Mm-hmm.
And he went out and tried to upgrade every other position he could. Or provide help for some of those positions where they had guys, Stephen Vogt.
No, that's a great point because it was quite evident the area that needed to improve.
So,
and that was the entire outfield.
I'm going to start with keeping these beloved name brand players that maybe aren't that good anymore, that are overpaid. I'm going to keep them because, one, I'm stuck with them, and two, the fans like them,
sure,
and management likes them. So I'm going to keep these guys. That's going to be the last thing that I do. I'm going to tinker with everything else first and see if I can pull those guys up a little bit.
But
he's done that.
But when is he going to have to pull the ripcord on some of the name brands on that?
When you get a better player at those positions.
Boy, that
But he's trying to fix the other positions first.
And that's
what I'm
fine.
Saying.
And that's fine. Which is the outfield, basically. And second base, because one of those guys was Joe Panic. He wasn't quite of the level of a Crawford and a Posey and a Mad Bum. But Panic
he was the
in
easiest
that.
Guy of that those guys we mentioned to move on from. He makes the least.
Right.
And he struggled the most.
Right. So it was that equation worked quite nicely. All right, we got to step aside. A reminder, top of the hour, Cam Inman. He was there in Kansas City yesterday for, now it's the great Jimmy Garoppolo. We've forgotten about Monday, JD, is that right? And now we're on the Jimmy G, he's our guy, bandwagon of success. That's where we are after last night's performance, correct?
He showed you what he needed to show you.
And Cam Inman from the Bay Area News Group will tell us about it. Top of the hour. John Dickinson, Jim Cozumore. Love to hear from you. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. Or you can hit us on the Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795. Thanks for listening. Sunday morning, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
All right, we're solving world problems here on the JD and Co. show on a Sunday morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Coming up in 10 minutes from now, Cam Inman, Bay Area News Group. He was in Kansas City. He covers the 49ers, and he talks about them here on the game. And we'll get his perspective on Jimmy Garoppolo.
You and I are balanced enough and crazy enough to solve a lot of problems.
Yes, that is true. If they'd only listen to us, right?
Yeah.
We have all the answers. No one ever asks us, though. So that kind of disappoints me. All right, JD, there's a lot of NFL stuff to go over. We're going to get to more Jimmy Garoppolo in just a second. Quick touch-up on I want to do a real quick Andrew Luck thing. In fact, I think we even have some of the sound. I was really disappointed to hear last night, if you haven't heard the news, Andrew Luck has announced his retirement. He was going to announce it today at a press conference. Adam Schefter caught wind of it, tweeted it out in the middle of a preseason game between the Colts and the Chicago Bears. The game was being played in Indianapolis. Fans in the crowd were getting the notification on their phones, and they were becoming upset. They started booing Andrew Luck as he was walking off the field. Some fans are seen, they're wearing their Luck jerseys. They're seen in the crowd taking their Luck jerseys off and throwing them on the ground.
Wow.
I mean, that's a bad look, right? That's a
really
bad look.
Really bad.
And we'll illustrate what Andrew Luck has gone through in just a couple of seconds. But here, let's start with number one on this, guys. on the rehab scenario he's had to go through over the last 4 years. Here's Andrew Luck.
For the last 4 years or so, I've been in this cycle of injury, pain, rehab, injury, pain, rehab. And it's been unceasing, unrelenting, both in season, both in and off season. And I've felt stuck in it. And the only way I see out is to no longer play football. It's taken my joy of this game away.
All right, so he talks about injury, pain, rehab. Injury, pain, rehab. And that's the life of a football player, but it's been pretty brutal. So, JD, we've got the list of his injury timeline. You go back to week 3, 2015, Luck injures his shoulder in week 3 against the Titans, misses the next two games. Week 6 through 9, 2015, plays through the injury before suffering season-ending kidney laceration. There was a game where he had the kidney lacerated where he played. He was urinating blood.
Oh.
He played and won a game with the lacerated kidney. But we tend to forget that. All right, 2016 offseason, opts against surgery in favor of very intense rehab. 2016 season, plays 15 games but is frequently limited in practice. January 2017, undergoes surgery to repair a torn labrum. 15 months after suffering the initial injury. What other injuries do we have on here? So, and there's some dandies. He had that calf injury this year. Whatever that injury is, it's a high ankle sprain, it's a calf. We heard there was a problem with the muscle growing into the bone. We've heard a bunch of different things. He did tell Peter King on August the 5th, I certainly believe that he's going to be able to play in week one. That's certainly the goal. But yesterday the news comes out that he's going to retire from football. And when you hear that, JD, is it, I know the first reaction is, oh my God, how can you quit football? You're only 29 years old. Is he maybe showing he's the smartest football player on the planet by doing what he's doing?
I think you could make a case for it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're 29. You've had all these injuries already. If your joy for the game isn't there, you've certainly made enough money as long as you've invested it well to where you can live a nice life. It's not like people aren't going to pay Andrew Luck to do something, you know, in the coming years. And,
yeah,
and he's a sharp enough guy to do probably whatever he wants, really,
right.
Whether that's business or whatever.
He stayed.
What was his degree?
He has an architecture degree from Stanford, and he could have left college after his junior year, would have been the number one pick in the NFL draft. Decided to stay in school to get the architecture degree. Because he loves it that much. He wanted to get the degree from Stanford as an architect, then became the number one pick after his senior year.
So if you're starting out, let's say, at 30 years old in the world, with that on your resume, throw the football out of it, and you got a little money in your pocket,
yeah,
you're doing real well. Because you're thinking at that point, you're living another 50 years, maybe.
You hope.
Yeah.
Now, football players' lives aren't exactly the same life expectancy as the average Jane and Joe out there.
No doubt.
But he is a little ahead of the game for a guy who has been totally banged up for the bulk of his career. And that's a football player's life. We understand it. But, man.
I think you got to tip your cap to him, honestly, for having the guts to do it.
That is a tough call. J.J. Watt said the same thing. That is a courageous decision to make, to walk away from something that you love so much, but it's beating you up to the point where it's not worth the fun. You can't. What's the phrase? Is the juice worth the squeeze?
Here's something else you heard a lot last night, just, you know, talking to different people. Well, what if he takes a year off and he comes back? You think we'll see Andrew Luck come back?
How about this? This is off the Chilton Auto Body text line. Get ready, because when Tom Brady retires, watch Andrew Luck decide to saddle up one more time under Bill Belichick.
Well, the Colts are going to have his rights.
Yeah, right? I know. You know, you wonder how that stuff, you know, if he sits out long enough or whatever this scenario is, if he can just decide to choose to go where he goes. And I believe it was Jim Irsay, that the owner, who said, I'm not ruling out a return by Andrew Luck.
I mean, at some point you have to wonder, look, is this guy just depressed? Is he fried by it all? Is he burned out? Is he just done with it to a point where he literally needs a refresher? Like, he needs a year to get his body right. And like, he could be he could be playing through it.
Mm-hmm.
And in his mind, he's thinking, hey, if I start playing through it, new things are going to pop up. I'm constantly getting injured. We read the list. Maybe there's three more things he's dealing with by January. And he's thinking, you know what? I'm taking a year off and, if I feel differently, I'm still close enough to my prime and talented enough to come back.
Let's hear more from Andrew Luck. What made him choose retirement here, the second cut? What do you got?
I've been stuck in this process. I haven't been able to live the life I want to live, taking the joy out of this game. And after 2016, where I played in pain and was unable to regularly practice, I made a vow to myself that I would not go down that path again. I find myself in a similar situation. And the only way forward for me is to remove myself from football in this cycle that I've been in. Come to the proverbial fork in the road. And I made a vow to myself that if I ever did again, I would choose me in a sense.
Choose me in a sense. That's a pretty bold thing to do. And I think a good thing to do. That's pretty massive right there. Golly. And if you see the press conference from last night, and again, this was supposed to be announced at a press conference today. Word leaked out from Adam Schefter last night, so it had to be addressed last night. He's at the microphone, and there are tears in his eyes as he's talking about this. This is no easy decision. This isn't a guy who made $99 million in his career and decides, you know what, I got over on him. I'm walking away from the game. This is a guy, it took something out of him.
What do you make of this take? 415, Chilton Autobody text line. To retire 1 week before the season is really weak. Left his team high and dry, could have retired at the end of last season. I wish him all the best, but bad timing.
I think that's a harsh take. I think it's a guy who didn't know at the end of last season he was going to quit. His sole intention was to get healthy, come back, and play football. And the Colts, by all measure, thought that he was coming back because they've surrounded him with some talent. That's a good football team. And a great Andrew Luck makes them one of the favorites in the AFC.
Yeah, they're really good now at just about every position except quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. It used to be the other way around. And that's why I just think that's harsh. He had to go through camp and know that his body just wasn't ready to get through this. And whatever this injury was pretty interesting. This just got handed to me from Nash Soliman, our producer today. And he points out that this is coming from ESPN's Adam Schefter. Luck would have been contractually obligated to pay back a total of $24.8 million stemming from his prorated amount of his $32 million signing bonus from 2016 and $12 million in roster bonuses he was paid when the new league year began in March. But the Colts are letting him keep it all.
Wow.
How about that? The Colts could redeem all that. What is it about? A total of give me the number. $24.8 million total. They could recoup $24.8 million. They're going to let him keep it.
That's cool.
It's
cool, but at the same time, torn cartilage in the ribs, partially torn abdomen, lacerated kidney, at least one concussion, torn labrum, and then the injury he's dealing with now.
Ouch.
Make a case that the Colts owe him that money.
Right. And 408 is right. The Colts took too long to build around him, and that's the problem. The fault is theirs.
That's fair.
It's on the Indianapolis Colts, who I still want to call Baltimore. I want to call our next guest, Cam Inman, because that's who it is. Cam Inman from the Bay Area News Group joins us top of the hour, 10 o'clock right now at 95.7 The Game. By the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco Radio.com Sports Station. John Dickinson, Jim Cozumore, Cam Inman joins us. Cam, you were there last night, Kansas City. Aside from wolfing down some great barbecue, your initial thoughts, everyone needs to know their initial thoughts on Jimmy Garoppolo and how he played.
Well, first of all, I was not there.
What?
I was stationed in the Bay Area last night.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. I know. But you know what? I saw what everybody else did. And I thought Jimmy Garoppolo acquitted himself well after some early, his first few throws were behind guys. And he started saying, uh-oh. And then his fourth down pass got batted down in the same lane, passing lane as it against the Broncos. But what he had going for him was he was able to get in a rhythm. And that's was not afforded to him in the previous game. So he's a guy that seems to kind of, as the game progresses, he kind of figures it out a little bit better. Shanahan figures out how to get guys open a little bit more maybe. And yeah, I think then you saw the confidence and he started hitting guys in the right spot. Offense was moving along well. And what it really seemed was every snap he kept getting more and more confident. So much so at the end of that first half, he's thrown in the triple coverage with Dante Pettis. I don't know exactly what he was thinking. Maybe he just wanted to see if Dante Pettis would go up and fight for the ball, which he really didn't do. So it was a great bounce-back game for him, and now we can move on. And we've got 2 weeks to build up the hype machine for a regular season opener with Jimmy Garoppolo healthy.
Well, Cam, what did you think of the play calling? More of a balance. He was in the shotgun, I know, on all four of the completions on that second series, but there was more of a balance under center, shotgun, some bootlegs, some rollouts. The play calling was a little bit different. Obviously, more plays means you can, you know, you can have a greater landscape.
Right, and I think everything is for a reason. Also, Kyle's not going to give away anything he wants to show in the regular season. But you also have to kind of test Jimmy out on certain moves to see how he can be comfortable with that. You know, a lot of these play action fakes that Kyle has, you're turning your body to the defense. You're back to the defense, and so you got to spin around. So let's see how that knee pirouettes, and it looked okay. Now, Jimmy hasn't necessarily rolled out of the pocket to throw a pass and jump off that leg. So you wonder if everything is tested fully, but I think it is. I mean, I have confidence in it after spending a week where everybody has hit the panic button wondering if it was going to be okay. I think everything from what I've seen in practice is he's okay. He had a hiccup, five hiccups in a row at practice with the interceptions. But then he finished that practice fine, and then Denver was such a small sample size. It was perfect for preseason overreaction theater, and it got everybody to lower their expectations on Jimmy and the 49ers, which actually I think is great because it's a franchise that's been so overhyped the last 2 years where now you can kind of play into whatever you're going to be. And if they're going to be a good team, they need to be a good team out of the gate and win in Tampa and maybe win in Cincy. Come home against Pittsburgh, and then you have a bye to catch your breath, and everybody can decide whether you're doomed for another playoffless season or if you're headed to the Super Bowl.
Cam, how did you read Kyle Shanahan's statement that his intent is to keep three quarterbacks on the 53-man roster to begin the season? Is that come and hit me with your trade offers, Cam, or is he really want to keep three?
Well, it's both. It serves both purposes, doesn't it? It doesn't stray far from the message he's had all along of, I have three great quarterbacks or good quarterbacks that we can go with. And there's no reason to say, we have these two because you're going to deflate one guy's trade value. The fact that Andrew Luck retires, boom, there's a quarterback spot opens up, or a backup spot at least, right? You have backup quarterbacks behind Garoppolo that have a lot of experience. And Nick Mullins has 8 starts. C.J. Beathard has 10. They know NFL offenses. They're getting to know NFL defenses. They're not young guys. So they are commodities that are worth trading if you need to. Now, are you convinced Jimmy's fully healthy? Then if so, yep, you can ditch one of them. But they're not going to give him away for free. I think that's what he's getting at, and that's positive. Now CJ is going to have to kind of raise his stock probably in the exhibition finale, because I don't know if necessarily anybody's going to give up a high draft pick for him or a mediocre draft pick. But Nick Mullins just seems like he's more the intriguing option out there, and I don't think that the Niners would part ways with him at all. So to me, it's almost like, is C.J. Beathard the one that somebody would be willing to go out and trade for? You know, Denver is the intriguing option because Drew Locke, their rookie, hurt his thumb, and their O.C. is Rich Scangarello, and Rich was the guy that brought in Mullins to the 49ers. And if they're concerned with their backup situation to the extent that, hey, maybe Flacco doesn't work out with us in the next year or two, which has been the case with Broncos quarterbacks after Peyton Manning, maybe Elway buys into that and goes aboard the Mullins hype train. But it's just one of those things. It's so hypothetical and speculation. I don't think the Niners would do that anyhow.
I like the connecting of the dots, though. Cam Inman covers the 49ers for the Bay Area News Group, joining us on 95.7 The Game. And who jumped off the screen to you yesterday as you watched the game? Were there some guys who needed to play well and you recognized, you know what, they kind of answered the bell, and it makes their case a little bit greater?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.